You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
Hey, you guys, this is Rob Paulson, Weeby Geeks. How about you? Do you be geeks? Weeby Geeks. Have I said the name enough? Weeby Geeks. Anyway, you are listening to Weeby Geeks along with Pinky.
Nah.
And Yakko. Hello, Weeby Geeks.
And Raphael. Cowabee Geeks. How's that? Cowabee Geeks. And also Donatello. It sounds remarkably like Raphael, but just pretend it's Donatello. And he watches Weeby Geeks, too. We all watch it down the turtle air.
And also Carl Weezer from Jimmy Neutron Boy Genius. I'm a geek, and that's about all I got going for me, except that I listen to Weeby Geeks just like you.
Thanks a lot for listening. Have fun.
And welcome to another episode of Weeby Geeks. The way the internet has been treating us tonight, you think it was a hillbilly horror show. Just, I don't know. Maybe that's a clue to something coming in the little later in the show. Just maybe.
Possibly.
So,
spoiler alert.
No. So, I am your host, Mike. And, of course, as always, it's Jules and Marty. Marty has survived whatever long hacking he had last week.
Apparently, my I call it my pre-con crud. I think I was talking about it on my C2E2 wrap-up a couple weeks ago. Like, I'm the only person to get sick before getting the con crud before going to the con. Well, it just turned into bronchitis. And so I was just hopped up on meds and sleeping all day last week. So I missed the great interview that you guys did last week. So jealous of. Got to talk to Yak. I hope you didn't offend him. I hope if you offended him, then I denounce your name.
He did say that he would love to come back on when he's got stuff to promote again.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
Especially after your lungs are done.
Try to take over the world.
Yeah, it killed me. I kept saying I can tough it through. I can talk to Rob Paulson. He's like a voiceover genius and one of the funny people I like to listen to and talk to. I just couldn't make it. I passed out. I was dead to the world by like 10 o'clock, and we record usually a couple hours after that. So
yeah. So
I was sad, but I hope you guys. Yeah, like I said, you did all right. I listened to the show this week, and so kudos, good job holding on for it without me.
So how are you guys doing this week? We know Marty's feeling a lot better. He's here.
I'm better. I'm still got a little bit of the crud in my lungs and throat. So if I sound a little scratchy, that's why. But I'm better. I'm alive.
Cool. Yeah, I actually was able to sneak a recording of you from earlier today. Yeah, how you were sounding. Hmm. So if you want to hear it, I'll play it.
Sure. Right. Sure.
That was Marty warming up for the show.
I couldn't even get that high. More like a bleh, bleh, something more like a swamp creature coming out of the lagoon than anything.
Well, I feel like I passed my sickness to you because I had that where I lost my voice and I didn't feel like I was sick, but then like you got your voice bronchitis. So yeah. I feel like I passed it through Skype to you.
I'm sure you did. I'm sure you did. And we made you you come on the show and you could barely talk. And it was like, poor Jules just plays along with it.
Hence why it's called computer viruses.
Right? Yep. That's true.
So, I guess first things first, let's knock some business out of the way real quick. Check out Amazon through weebegeeks.net. You go to Amazon, you can buy, some nice Audio Technica headphones or earbuds.
Old cough medicine.
Golden cough medicine.
That's what I needed.
Costs you nothing extra, but it does come back and gives us a kick, a cut back to help support the show. Also to support us on Patreon. You can actually link to our Patreon page right off the homepage as well. Rick's Comic City for 10% off your order if you enter the code Weeby Geeks. It's all one word. And then also to check out Superhero Stuff. And they also have a subscription box called Hero Box. And Her Universe, also all affiliates of the show. So, and then we have yet another new podcast that's joined us this week, within the last week. So we welcome to the Weeby Geeks Network, the Neverland Podcast. And then they're joining the ranks of Mighty Marvel Geeks, WDW After Dark, WDW Tiki Room, E-Ticket Time, Talking Comics, Pro Wrestling Cast, Dining at Disney, The Well Watchers, Video Game Book Club. Man, they've been quiet for the last few weeks. Mm. Do you know something about that, Marty?
No, I haven't refreshed my my podcast app in a while, I guess.
Yeah, I haven't seen something from them in a while. Less Than or Sequel To, which I got a question for those guys, but Geek Watch 1 and the Doctor Who Dark Journey serial drama podcast. Now, I mentioned Less Than or Sequel To. Their whole thing is their shows talk about sequels. Okay, so like this week was Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Last week, Less Than or Sequel To, number 14, the 2014 Michael Bay Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Is that really a sequel? I thought that was a reboot.
Considering that's yet another movie I didn't see,
I'm
going to say I thought it was a remake. I thought it was built as a remake.
I thought it was a reboot remake.
Like, that was the first time that, actually, just from the promos and stuff, it was the first time that April O'Neil met Michelangelo and his funky lips moving.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what?
True.
It's me jumping the gun again. I probably read it wrong when I first read it, but now I'm seeing it now. In this episode, we dive into the 2014 reboot of the Ninja Turtles franchise. But that's the one episode I didn't get a chance to listen to yet. And of course, the Bill and Ted's one just aired. I'm too behind on with them, and this is one.
But so you could say, even though it is a reboot, you could still say it's still a sequel too, because it's continuing the same thing, the same characters. You know, reboots and sequels are essentially the same.
But definitely, you can't go wrong. You can't go wrong with any of the shows on the network. Of course,
except for that Mighty Marvel Geek. That one's not so great.
No, I think that one's kind of marvelous.
Oh,
we start this crap again.
Sounded like we set each other up, but I had no idea you were coming back with that one.
Y'all see the Supergirl trailer?
First
look from CBS?
I heard it because we had so many errands after I worked this morning to do that. My husband had it on his iPhone, so he plugged it into our car, so I was able to actually hear it, but I didn't actually see it, but I was able to hear everything that happened, and I think it sounds really good. I want to actually go back and actually see, like, everything that happened. But I'm hoping, like, my daughter watches The Flash, and I am telling you, she is a Flash fanatic now. She talks about The Flash constantly. It's like one of her favorite superheroes now, so I'm really hoping that this is going to be all ages in it. Based on, like, what I heard, it sounds like it's going to be okay for her. She's 10 now, so.
It should be. I know it's going to be in the 8 o'clock time slot on CBS. They're going to do with it sort of like what they did this last fall, putting Big Bang Theory there on Mondays until, like, the fourth week of football. Because CBS does the Thursday games. That's what, about 4 weeks, Marty? Is that what they did last year?
Last year, I think they actually got half the season. They got it up till Thanksgiving, so it was like half the season.
Was it that late?
Yeah.
No,
because Thanksgiving's when Thanksgiving NFL Network always gets a football games. CBS then Fox, and they alternate what time, and then NFL Network gets the night one. So that's when I want to say maybe it's a week before that this year they switched it over to the NFL.
I thought it was through the end of October.
Yeah, it was like 2 months. I think.
Was it 2 months? I don't remember. Yeah. Well, Big Bang Theory didn't start to almost start of October anyway.
Yeah. And when they did, so they didn't start when most of the other shows started. And then when they did, I think they did like 4 episodes on Monday.
When Big Bang moves back to Thursday, that's when Supergirl will take over on Mondays. So good chance it's going to be an all ages.
Would have been nice of them if they got the Big Bang lead in. I wonder if that would actually have some carryover crossover or not. But you want Big Bang, which is the half hour, to be at the top of the hour. So would you do double Big Bang just to give it to all the Supergirl? Or, that's a thing for those gray-haired marketing people in CBS to figure out.
Yeah. No, I think very, very enjoyable trailer. I'm excited. It's definitely got me going. Yeah, if I don't catch it live, well, I can't catch it live because of work, but it's definitely going on the DVR. So, yeah.
The only thing, it's like 6 minutes long. I'm like, wow, they really put everything out there
for a first look. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's great though.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, well, I need to watch it, but what I listened to, I was excited just hearing it. I was like, oh, I'm really super excited. I'm really super excited for little girls to get excited about Supergirl. Like that to me, I mean, I'm already excited, but that to me, even little boys, like today we got Target has these little skateboards and we picked up the Wonder Woman one. And my son was like freaking out because he loves Wonder Woman, as I've said like a million times. And I almost didn't want to show him because I was like, I want to keep it in the package. And I was like, oh, but I don't want to keep it from him. So even like my little boy, like I want him to be excited about Supergirl. So I just hope it brings in a whole bunch of Supergirl fans, like everybody together. So I'm excited.
Now, let's see if that excitement carries on. Have y'all seen the Jim and Holograms trailer?
Uh-oh. No. Because I just can't see them doing this one well. Because I barely cared about the cartoon, so I have even less interest in a live-action movie, to be honest with you, 30 years later.
I will tell you, the cartoon, I'd rather have seen an extend, you know, them go back and put 3 or 4 episodes of that back together.
Josie and the Pussycats level? Is it that kind of?
No.
How did this get?
How about we go? It's more Hannah Montana level.
Did Hannah Montana have a movie? I don't know.
Yes, she did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. There was a movie.
Thank God I didn't have a kid at that age.
The thing that kills me with this is, as Melissa pointed out, listeners might remember her from the MegaCon recap episode, MegaCon and Steel City Con episode.
You mean, AKA your wife?
Yes. Sorry, it's late. I'm drifting some. Thankfully, we recorded that interview. Oh, the spoiler alert! We recorded that first. She asked, "Where's Synergy? Where's the computer?" Or I mean, there's like elements that made up Jim and the Holograms that is not here. I mean, it was Synergy that transformed her from who she was into Jim and transformed the Holograms. Oh no, yeah. They do a full. Oh, let's put on makeup, let's put on a wig, and oh, look, we're like Hannah Montana. Really? Why?
I didn't even know that went in on Jim on the cartoon. I didn't know there was a transforming thingy.
I don't know a lot about Jim. I
apparently don't know anything about Jim.
Apparently not.
I'd like to keep it this way, actually. I'll just totally block out everything about the movie. When does it come out?
I have...
This year?
This year.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, I really am not on the Jim mailing list, apparently.
Say, Unicky.
So, yeah, I got then I guess we'll go back to TV then. 12 pilots that are being considered the best pilots that need to get the shows greenlit. We know 2 of them have happened. We know Supergirl, because we just talked about it. Muppets as well. And apparently Muppets is going to have it's going to be more of an adult feel, where it takes place behind the scenes type stuff, and you might see sort of like The Office type feel to it, where the characters have interviews with the camera type deal. But it's supposed to be pretty good. There's a brief little trailer for that.
That was kind of like the Muppet Show from back in the 80s, where it was less about the actual show that they were putting on and more about the behind the scenes stuff. So
yeah, but this is more behind the scenes, and I don't think really it's going to be the musical numbers or the type of guests. It's just going to be Muppets. Over on Fox, you're going to have The Grinder. This is from Entertainment Weekly. They say, you know, the Grinder. Terrible title, but yet industry insiders are talking about this comedy. Rob Lowe plays a TV lawyer who takes over his family's law firm. Aww. So, then of course, Supergirl. Also on NBC, Kingmakers. We're being told, EW was told that it's supposed to be a revenge spinoff.
Like revenge?
But yeah. ABC keeps insisting it's... the show. But ABC keeps... Yeah, but NBC's insisting it's not a revenge spinoff.
I just watched the finale today.
Revenge
film. It was so good. Oh, I'll be watching that.
Another one from ABC is Quantico, about a group of FBI agents in training at Quantico, and one of them is a terrorist.
Ooh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Coming to Fox, taking its lead from the big screen, Minority Report.
Mm-hmm.
The consensus.
It's funny, Jules and I had the exact same reaction. Like, yeah. Doing that, huh?
The consensus. All right. The consensus seems to be that if the crime-solving format is perfect for a broadcast network, and if the production makes an ambiguous script work, it could be great. Still, TV in general, and Fox in particular, has struggled to present near-future realities in a successful way. Remember Almost Human, Terra Nova, and Dollhouse?
I was just about to say, didn't they already try that with Almost Human? So I don't feel it. I mean, just because it has the same name as a movie, I think it's going to help.
I'm so mad at them about canceling that because I love that show.
The next one is called The Player. It was formerly known as Endgame. This is the Las Vegas set drama about a sniper who has to compete a series of impossible tasks. Sounds like it could scratch our 24 itch.
I don't know. 24 is tough to replace.
The next one is a kind of a combo. The Arrow Flash spinoff, and this is the only pilot or spinoff I've heard that is not going to be happening, and that's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So, apparently, Brandon Routh, a.k.a. Palmer, a.k.a. The Atom, and Wentworth Miller are going to be starring in the Arrow Flash spinoff. Originally, Adrian Pulaski and Nick Blood were going to be in the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I know the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. spinoff got axed last week, so that one is not happening.
What about Agent Carter? Is that coming back?
It is coming back for season
renewed.
2.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's still going to be 8 seasons. Eight episodes.
Mm-hmm.
More of a special in between the mid-season break for S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good... I was curious if that was always going to be the intent, where it would be like smaller, digestible series instead of like the big, long series.
At the moment, that way is... You know, it's easier for Haley Atwell to do her theater commitments or what few film commitments she has. Now, CBS is got a show pilot that's being pitched for CBS called Super Clyde. Apparently they tried to bring this back a couple years ago. This project's about a fast food worker who tries to become a superhero, and originally was starring Rupert Grint from the Harry Potter franchise, but it did not get the order. Now it's on try number 2, this time starring Charlie McDermott from The Middle. Mm-hmm. So CW is bringing another horror series back, Tales from the Dark Side.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And it looks like it will be a full season length. It'd be great to have a Twilight Zone type show, and it could revive anthologies as single episode stories. And get something like that, so you could come in at any time and not be lost because you've missed an episode or two, because they're all, you know, single anthologies.
Right,
and if that's not enough, Cheerleader Death Squad.
Yeah.
Also on the CW, if only because it's called Cheerleader Death Squad, said one fan of the show who's clearly not a fan of the CW. It's like Mean Girls meets Agent Carter. It is a fun script that's different than the DC Comics Vampire Diaries crap that they have, closer to Jane the Virgin.
Oh, well, I love Jane the Virgin.
Some random insights about various pilots. Frankenstein on Fox stars Rob Krasinski as a cop brought back from the dead. Isn't that RoboCop? We're very skeptical because we've seen endless. Now, this is still EW talking. We're very skeptical because we've seen the endless variations on the story, and it feels tired. Rush Hour on CBS stars John Fu and Justin Hires in the series version of the hit cop film franchise.
God. Really?
Yeah.
I thought everybody kind of wanted to forget about that after Rush Hour 2, because I don't remember much anybody ever saying Rush Hour 3 was good. I don't even remember that many people even saying they watched Rush Hour 3, so.
I didn't see it.
Why are we getting a TV show?
Now, on ABC, Untitled NBA Comedy. That's right. NBA as in basketball. It's a fresh TV topic. We're told the show is being made with plenty of cooperation from the NBA. Yeah. Just like the NBA, I'm not watching it.
I was going
to
say.
I wonder if they're trying to get their own, like, Hard Knock series like the NFL has. Something to kind of give you another reason that maybe more on the female side to actually watch the show. But I know the guy.
Possibly.
They've got the thing with Kenny the Jet Smith. They got, like, a reality show with him and his family.
Well, unless this is going to be an actual fictitious sitcom in which they're going to tie in with the NBA. I don't know.
What if they had a variety show with like different athletes being on it, and it would just be like Night of Stars, but it would be the stars doing things that they're not necessarily good at, like singing and dancing and acting. I would watch that.
Well, would you watch on ABC Uncle Buck, an African American cast version starring Mike Epps?
I do like Mike Epps, but I don't know. No, I don't think so.
Coming to Fox, Lucifer, based on the comic about Satan living in Los Angeles, helping solve LAPD crimes.
Been getting buzz. I was going to say, I've been hearing some pretty decent buzz about that one since the upfronts came out. And so it might be getting... I'm actually more interested to see not so much how well that show's going to do, but how much the right wing is going to hate that there's a show called Lucifer on TV.
Yeah.
It's not like on HBO or Showtime or something like that, where everyone can see it.
Next one's Original Sin, previously called Flesh and Blood, about a presumed dead son of a local politician who returns to a small town. Yeah. Blind Spot on NBC, a woman, Jamie Alexander, found naked, covered with tattoos that reveal a mystery. Was really good, like a cross between Memento and an old Fox show called John Doe. Hey, Jamie. Jamie Alexander, hey, was quite a bit of potential. And then on CBS, Limitless, the crime procedural version of the book and 2011 film, stars Jake McDormand. The pilot, we're told, came out amazing. It's a grounded sci-fi that explores smart drugs. We followed up by asking, yes, but isn't it yet another super smart guy solving crimes? The response, well, yeah. So probably a hit then. So
I'm sure there's a CSI hole to fill somewhere, so it'll work.
Probably. So that's that. Mm-hmm. To me, not too many that really grab my attention.
Yeah. So I've been hearing a few people kind of talking about Lucifer, so I'm kind of curious how they're going to pull that one off, especially with the demise of Constantine lately. Do they feel like they might have a similar kinship in a way?
Right.
Similar audience even, but we'll see.
Well, I'll tell you, that Supergirl trailer, if it's not the one, the top five, oh my lord, I need to watch this show. And it doesn't do well that first day, that first episode, somebody screwed up. Because it just looks amazing. The costume has the same type of look as what it was from Man of Steel. It's not the full bodysuit, but the top half is very similar. And there's a great little line talking about, because they're saying, oh, you don't need the cape, don't need the cape. And then it comes back, oh, cape. I guess it does help with the aerodynamics. So I was like, okay, kind of a jab back at the Incredibles. Right. It's kind of fun.
Huh. And of course, the lead, can't remember her name, Melissa something, she was a Glee alumni. So I always throw that out there when they're from Glee, because of course, Grant Gustin was in Glee. And I'm like, Glee, best show ever.
Well, and her boss is Calissa Flockhart, a.k.a. Miss Mrs. Harrison Ford, a.k.a. Ally McBeal. So,
are they still married?
I believe so.
Okay. I hadn't been keeping up on that one, so I don't know.
So, we got anything else this week before we bring in our special guest, Mr. Bo Keister?
I can't think of anything. I'm kind of excited. I went to the comic book shop today and, just kind of getting the vibe of the big crossovers for the comics people with DC and Marvel. A lot of people not digging on Convergence, but a lot of people really buzzing on Secret Wars. So
yeah,
with that, with what other people were telling me, I was like, all right, I'll try out Secret Wars. So
yeah, I think
one or two this week.
I think Secret Wars is going to be digital pulls for me. Only because I just don't want to get into, I don't know. Would you say they're worth actually getting the physical book for all
issues?
I'm
always going to get the physical book. Because of that weird thing of me of I don't want all my money to go with a hard drive crash. So I'm going to buy a physical book whenever I can. But I'm at least going to try the main story. I'm not going to get all the secondary side stories of that.
So you think the main story is worth grabbing the actual book instead of just
from everybody that I've talked to, they've all said yes. And that was just after just reading the first issue. So take my secondhand word of mouth for what it is. I'll let you know next week after I actually do read it. There you go.
So. What about you, Jules?
Off Friday and Saturday, hoping to catch up on a lot of comics because I'm behind on everything. Saga came out today, so I'm really excited about that. I think I'm only one behind in that, and Saga's like the best comic in the world. So, and of course Fiona Staples, who is the artist on Saga, she's going to be doing the new Archie comic. So
yeah,
it's going to be quite.
Archie really kind of messed things up.
Yeah, made people mad with their Kickstarter, I guess.
It's not worth getting into. I don't understand half of it at the moment, so we'll save that for another day.
I didn't know why people were upset. I was like, I don't know.
Well, people are upset because, you know, Archie's actually making decent bank with their books, and yet instead of doing what they're doing, and getting help from the comic book shops, you know, whatnot, they're essentially ignoring the comic book shops, going straight to Kickstarter and doing everything through Kickstarter.
Well, my thing with that too, though, is that, you know, Kickstarter, even to me, is still like, it's still a new thing. So people are still going to go buy the comics at the comic store.
Supposedly these books weren't going to be available through stores.
But like the variants and stuff. I mean, I don't know. I guess we'll see. It was all a big mess.
Yeah. So, well, we're going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to have, on the line with us, Bo Keister from Hillbilly Horror Show. So we'll be right back and you're listening to Weebie Geeks.
Hey kids, John and Adam from Megadads here. We want to take a few seconds to tell you about how awesome our show is.
Megadads Live is a monthly show that looks at the world of video games from the old, wrinkly point of view of two middle-aged gamers.
Are you talking about us?
Yes, that's us.
It's not easy to find time to play games when you have to mow the lawn, change diapers, and unsuccessfully satisfy a significant other.
Speak for yourself.
So check out Megadads Live on iTunes or at our website, megadads.org. Each download raises money to help fight infant Alzheimer's.
Is that a real disease?
No, it's not.
On the line with us tonight, you might know him from Killing Kennedy and Remember the Titans, or as I've most recently discovered him through YouTube, through the behind-the-scenes videos with horrible... I did this last time. This is a take two. With Hillbilly Horror Show, Bo Keister. How you doing tonight, Bo?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Well, as long as the internet stays up, we're doing fine. Yeah.
We're holding on for dear life.
It is held together with duct tapes and dreams, so it's amazing, you know, that
I'm right there with you, much. Man. Everything I do is done on a roll of tape and a case of beer. So
we joke we're the official voice of the geek revolution, yet the revolution is revolting against us tonight.
Yeah, we need some geek love. We need geek love.
Put some tin cans and some string together and just complete this podcast tonight. We'll be all right. We'll make it.
So I'm in,
guys. Let's do this.
That turns us into the companion show, the Hillbilly Horror Podcast.
Nice. I like it.
So
we can make this work, I'm telling you.
That has a nice ring to it. I like that.
So tell us about Hillbilly Horror Show.
Well,
as we've been saying,
you know, it's so funny how it came together. I mean, Blue and I met when he was doing his film House of Good and Evil. Of all places in the world that he would have chosen to shoot a film, he chose Floyd, Virginia, which is this kind of small little hippie-esque community about 20 minutes from where I live now. And he was over there scouting locations, and somebody had told him about me. I had an acting studio in downtown Christiansburg at the time. And they said, you know, oh, he knows tons of people. He's got resources. He can probably help you out. So he calls me up just, you know, one day randomly, and we hit it off, and you know, I helped him out with some things, and he said, well, you know, hey, we've got a couple of roles that we still haven't filled, you know, take a look at them. And so I ended up playing Sheriff Hanatusky in House of Good and Evil. And after that, you know, we stayed in touch by Facebook and by phone, and we kept bouncing ideas off of each other. I mean, we're constantly thinking forward. What's the next project? What's, you know, where can we play, you know, with this idea or that idea for a film or a show? And December of 2013, he hits me up, says, I've got an idea for a show and nobody else is doing this right. And, you know, he's, you know, I was well aware of the horror host subset, of the genre. And, you know, I mean, it was always popular. I mean, you had Elvira and Joe Bob Briggs and Creepshow and Tales from the Crypt. I mean, these were huge shows for years. And he said, you know, why don't we do one that, you know, centers around you as the main host, and we kind of bring in a couple other people, and we turn it into Hee Haw meets Tales from the Crypt. And I'm like, that's brilliant. I mean, that, so we kind of developed it from there. And in February of 2014, we shot our first two volumes in a week and got them done, got them in the can. And it was also, part of it was also the fact that we knew so many really great, you know, indie horror filmmakers that had these fantastic shorts that nobody was seeing unless they, you know, kind of trolled around the film festival circuit. So, you know, this great work was getting lost. I mean, you look at a film like Frankie and the Ant, which is our lead-off film on Volume 1. That thing, I think it's won like 25 or 26 awards.
Wow.
All over the world. I mean, you know, people need to see that work. And funny enough, Christine Woods, who plays the female lead in Frankie and the Ant, just, you know, did her rounds on The Walking Dead, playing the police officer chick in the hospital. I can't remember the name of the character off my head, but yeah, Officer Lerner, that's what it was. Right. So I mean, these are people that are out there doing some stuff, and you know, we wanted to help bring exposure to that as well. But we knocked out our first two volumes in February of 2014, and now to date, we're up to four volumes. We're planning 5 and 6, and we're in the UK, we're in India, we're in South Korea, we're on, I think, 4 or 5 Roku channels, and Volume 1 and Volume 2 are out on DVD, and we're hoping, if all goes according to plan, we'll be releasing Volume 4. Volume 3 will come out this summer on DVD, and then we'll release Volume 4 on iTunes and Amazon Prime first.
Okay.
But, you know, I mean, to come that far in such a short amount of time has been hectic. but, you know, people are responding to the show, and they love it.
Yeah, I've seen, like I said, I've seen some of the behind-the-scenes clips and some of the preview clips. Absolutely loved it. I loved the one where y'all are talking about the different people in the show, and then the director and the audio guy. And being an audio engineer myself, I laughed with the audio guy one. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, nice job.
Yeah, Brian's a funny guy. He really is. But I always know, he very subtly always lets me know if I'm on target with, you know, something that I might improv in the middle of filming. Because if I can hear him over in the corner snickering, you know, I know I've hit home. Right. So it's like, yeah, we'll keep that.
If you see the boom mic start dropping into... You're on target.
Laughing too hard.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I can see our director sitting behind the camera biting the inside of his mouth, trying to keep himself from laughing. So that's pretty much what we do all weekend, is sit around and just improv and laugh our asses off at each other and just have a great time.
Now, the female lead on the show is an up-and-comer. If I remember her bio, she just recently graduated?
She funny enough, today is her birthday, I believe. Either today or yesterday was her birthday, so happy birthday, Rachel. She just graduated with a degree in exercise science, I think, from Old Dominion University here in Virginia.
Okay.
So, she's... Rachel is such a good sport. I mean, we demand a lot from her.
y'all pull out every gag with her.
Oh, like any chance we get.
The Alabama ice fishing bit with her adding ice, like, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like,
oh, yeah.
If you're not looking at the ice bag, then you might be looking in the right direction.
if in my estimation, if you're looking at the ice bag, just stop watching the show immediately. Because you're not going to make it much further.
No.
She really has been a great sport. The first conversation we ever had about her wardrobe, thank God it was by phone, because if she'd have been sitting in front of me, my face was probably 40 shades of red, and my mind was probably thinking 50 shades of gray. But I mean, she was just so cool about it. She's like, "Bo, I'm a model. I have these conversations every day." I'm like,
so that's what I was about to ask you. Is like, how did she get roped into the acting side if she's not, doesn't sound like that's her major emphasis in studies. So I was gonna say, you just roped her in for modeling. She had that accreditation to her.
Well, what it was is we had put some casting notices out there, but we really hadn't found anybody and we wanted somebody that was based in the Southeast region starting out, because we wanted to. I mean, Scott's up in Pennsylvania. You know, I'm around Blacksburg, Virginia, and we wanted to be able to. At the time, Blue was in Virginia as well, and we knew we were going to shoot in Baltimore because that's where the bulk of our crew, all of our team with Suited Four Productions, that's where they're based. So it made more sense to bring a handful of people in than bring a bunch of crew people and two cast members, you know, somewhere else. So once we had determined Baltimore area was going to be where we're at, we wanted to try to find somebody in relatively close proximity to that area. And, we looked at, you know, people from New York and people from Atlanta and, you know, all over, and just, we couldn't find that right blend of what we wanted. One might have the looks, but they didn't have, you know, the sass that Lulu requires. And so I reached out to a friend of mine in Richmond that, she runs a talent agency called Liquid Talent. And I just sent her the breakdown. I said, if you got anybody that you can think of in your stable that fits this, you know, let me know. And sure enough, she said, this is the one girl I can think of that will fit it perfectly. And so we had her audition, and the second I got her tape, I told Blue, I said, we got her. We got Lulu. So
it's all about the right assets.
Yes, it is, indeed.
Pun intended.
Yes, and well taken.
How
is it working with both an actor and like a producer? Has that been like a fun experience for you? Has it been kind of more work than you realized doing?
No, I mean the show really runs itself very well. I'm fortunate that Blue and Sharif, our director Sharif Salama, the two of them handle the technical side, and Jared Noe also. They all kind of group together. They take care of all the technical behind the scenes crap. I handle everything to do with cast. That's my forte. That's what I'm suited for. I know, I know SAG contracts and all of that, so I can handle all of those things. And, you know, so with them running the technical side and me running, the acting side of things, things. We rarely have any hiccups. Everything just has always run smooth. And Scott and Rachel and I have gelled so well together as a team. Now that, we've got four volumes in the can, when we get on set, it's just, the routine just flows right together. It doesn't take us any time to get up to speed with one another. And we've learned to read each other in the middle of a scene. So if I go off the reservation and improv some stuff, they pretty much are able to just kind of roll with it, flow right along with it.
Nice. Always nice to have.
Now, I know you have worked on another movie called The Cabining that just came out last year.
Yeah. I'm really proud of that film. It's such a clever movie, and it's not afraid to poke fun at itself. It's not afraid to poke fun at the horror genre and especially the slasher set. But the Capera brothers, Mike and Steve, just did an amazing job with that film across the board. And we had such a terrific cast around us. But playing Bruce, the second I read the script, originally they had asked me, to read for one of the cop roles. And I called Mike and I said, "Who's playing Bruce?" And he said, "Well, nobody right now." And I said, "I want to crack this sucker." And I taped the audition that afternoon and sent it to him. And Steve actually got on Skype with me and took me through a couple of things. 10 minutes later, they called me and said, "It's yours." And Steve gave me so much levity on set. He said, "Just do what you do. If you feel something, go with it. If I don't like it, I'll tell you." And I think almost every one-liner, almost every little crazy improv thing I did in that film got cast, save for one or two. And Mike's a hell of an improv actor himself. There's actually a scene where we're driving in the van from Los Angeles to Shangri-La, and that entire thing was improv. Mike just showed up at the house where the cast was staying with our cinematographer and our gaffer and said, "Hey, you want to go shoot some shit?" And I'm like, "Okay." And we loaded up in the van and rode around for 2 hours just improv that scene. It was so much fun. But the film turned out great. It's gotten rave reviews from almost every site that's looked at it. And now it's out on video on demand. I think it's available through Vudu. I think it's getting ready to go to Netflix at some point in time. Just a great film, though. A lot of fun.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about it. I just haven't had a chance to catch it yet, because I'm not sure how quick Bright House is on picking up the film. My wife and I are friends with an actor by the name of Blaine Weaver.
Yeah.
Out of Shreveport, and a couple of his movies, we're kind of slow. He said, "Oh, they're hitting video on demand now." Well, a week or two later, they finally show up down here. So
yeah. I know it's out on Comcast and Dish. I don't know if it's on DirecTV. Okay. Yeah, but I know it's out on Wow and a few others. But definitely available through Vudu. I know that because I actually watched it on Vudu.
Did you have to pay for it?
Yeah, I did. Funny enough, I had loaned my copy to a friend and hadn't gotten it back yet, and had some friends in town, and they were like, "We want to watch your movie," and I'm like, "All right, you all $4, I'll pay it. I'll pay. Just leave me alone and don't criticize my work." I'm sensitive. I'm sensitive, very sensitive. Now,
do you find it odd watching yourself?
Not as much now as I used to, but I will still nitpick my performances apart. If they're small little day player roles, where I've got just two or three lines or whatever, I don't pay much attention to that. And it's just kind of like, "Oh, cool. Okay. I look okay." And I go on about my business. But, and The Cabining, I knew what to expect from that. And I was really proud of that work, and I loved the way it came together. But yeah, there's other films, where I will absolutely pick myself apart. I will sit there and go, "What were you doing? What is that look on your face?" It's the first of all actors.
So is it safe to say that you love improv more than like following a script, or do you like both equally?
Well, I guess it it all depends on what the genre is. Anything to do with comedy, you know, yeah, I mean, turn me loose. Just turn me loose. Because I mean, I'll see things and I'll want to run with it. And when you got, that's where you catch lightning in a bottle. And you look at, you know, people like Will Ferrell, I mean, and Jim Carrey. I mean, there's no telling how much stuff makes it into a film that was never in the script. They went with their gut on it and it worked, so they kept it. And I think that's where you find the magic in a comedic film is when a director trusts their actors to run with things a little bit. But now when you talk about something like, drama, dramatic acting is a whole other ball of wax. It really is. And most of the time with drama or historical stuff, things are written a certain way because they're meant to be that way. And you don't want to deviate too far from, I mean, you might change a word here or there, but for the most part, you want to stay in that box. But I mean, there's a love in me for both of them because I've done really heavy dramas. As a matter of fact, Blue and I are working on getting distribution for a film I did a few years ago called Where I Began. It's a real gritty Southern drama character that most people would be shocked to see me play after they've seen The Cabining or Hillbilly Horror Show. They'd be like, that ain't the same guy. Because I'm a nasty dude in this film. But I look at that performance as well, and I'm sitting there going, you know what? I can live with that. I can live with that. That works for me. I don't know. I think comedic side is more fun to do. Definitely a better energy when you do that heavy drama crap, man. There were nights where you just leave it all on the table. I don't even remember going back to where I was staying. I was so exhausted. But, wow. If the end result works, I guess that's what.
So tell us a little bit about your, Indiegogo campaign for Finding Waldo?
Oh, yeah. Well, we've got about 2 weeks left on it. It's been a hard row to hoe. I mean, you're competing with so many different projects, not just films. I mean, you're competing with art restoration and, I want to build a statue or, I want to make grandma some potato salad. And it's like, damn, man, how do you compete with somebody making their grandma potato salad?
I think there's a Indiegogo campaign to help raise money for Tom Brady and the New England Patriots fine by the NFL. Yeah, so, you got that to compete with, too.
They don't need it. Don't need Finding Waldo.
help this billionaire afford this $1 million fine that the NFL levied. Okay.
They can donate to Tom Brady, and then Tom Brady can donate to us. That's acceptable as well. We'll take money from anywhere.
I put that GoFundMe for Tom Brady up there with cosplayers going, I'm raising money because I need a new Xbox. No.
No.
No, you don't.
No, you really don't.
I need a new Xbox.
I need an Xbox. we've already got a good portion of our budget, thanks to our production partners at Planet Capricorn. They came in for a significant part of the budget, and we are talking to other investment groups and things like that. Hopefully we'll complete the budget through more traditional investment. But the Indiegogo campaign is there to help us. Everything we gain from it just helps us enhance this film. And Blue has written an amazing script. I mean, I tell people, the only way I can really describe it is it's The Hangover meets Thelma and Louise and, had Sideways as a kid or something. it's got a little bit of flavor of all of them. I mean, there's just some raucous, hilarious moments throughout the script where, I was sitting there reading it and just crying laughing. And then there's also some really, deep and dark moments to it where, you kind of see these characters in a whole different way that you don't expect to. Because, it's being billed by most everybody as a comedy, but they don't realize there's going to be a lot of twists and turns in this film. But it basically follows my character, Chance Reed, who was former pro football player. He was the Tom Brady of his period, minus the deflated footballs. And but he battles with alcoholism, and a fateful night of drunk driving lands him in prison for several years. And we pick his story up where he is now out of prison and is working as a mailroom monkey at a Lloyd's of London-like insurance firm. And they insure the brain of this eccentric novelist, Waldo Green, who is now claiming to be insane. And he's already sniffed out other insurance adjusters and given them the boot. So they pull me out of the mailroom, sending me in under the guise of being a journalist, hoping to appeal to his ego a little bit and see if I can determine anything from it. Well, once I go to interview him, everything goes to hell. He kidnaps me, busts out of the psych ward, and we end up on this god-awful road trip that I may or may not survive. But as the story kind of flows, you begin to realize that there's something else going on here. Waldo's not all he appears to be, and when the twist ending hits, there's going to be a lot of sore jaws from him bouncing off the ground. The audience is going to love it. But it's really got a great message behind it, of redemption, forgiveness, and it just takes a hell of a road to get to it. Truth is a naked swimmer, as we say.
So if all goes well with the financing, how soon are you looking to do production on it?
We'll roll this October in Arizona. Shoot will be about 21 to 23 days, and then you figure a few months of post, and it'll be ready to go in 2016.
Excellent.
Nice.
And our hope is to put it into, get it into one of the bigger film festivals, get it into a South by Southwest or Tribeca or something like that, to give it a real massive launching platform, because we believe it's going to have such a broad audience appeal, it's going to be hard to deny it.
Then you'll have to come back to a small little podcast, maybe like Weeby Geeks, and plug it again.
Absolutely. Anytime.
So, I kind of want to go back a little bit. I want to say probably one of your bigger films that you were involved in was Remember the Titans.
Yeah.
What was it like being involved in that movie and in that group of actors?
Wow. I mean, it's one of those things I kind of look back on it now. And I mean, you're standing there with Denzel Washington and Will Patton. Those guys have been around. I mean, both amazing actors. I mean, Denzel Washington's a legend. That was only my second speaking role of my career. And being able to sit there and watch them work was an education in and of itself. So that was really cool. But then, you look at who the surrounding cast ended up being, Ryan Gosling and, Kip Pardue, and it's just kind of like, wow. Donald Faison, went on to Scrubs fame, and it's like there were some heavy hitters in that film. They weren't at the time, but man, they're big time now. So that part of it's really cool. But the cool story for me in it was my dad was actually a football coach here in Virginia, and when he was an assistant at Virginia Beach High School many moons ago, he actually coached against Herman Boone.
Wow.
Now, this was years before T.C. Williams was formed, but he actually coached against Herman Boone, and in high school, I actually played against T.C. Williams. So my dad, when I got the audition and I told him what film was about, he was like, oh, I can tell you all about that. He knew the whole story. He knew everything about it. And, I went into that audition so psyched up. I was like, I got to have a role in this film. And the casting director looks at me and goes, you want to audition for it first? And I'm like, no, you don't understand. I've got to have a role in this film. And then in 2012, I go to New York to film a movie called Reunion 108, a baseball comp. And the gentleman who wrote and produced it and plays one of the characters in it, a guy named Billy Sample, he was a huge football star and baseball star here in our area of Virginia. He went to Andrew Lewis High School. He went on to play for the Yankees, the Braves, the Texas Rangers. I mean, he was in the major leagues for, God, I think 12 years or something. So he had written this film and I got cast in it, and I go up to New York, and turns out he was actually on the Andrew Lewis team that played the Titans, the actual Titans that were depicted in the movie. He played them in the state semifinals, and he said they mopped the field field with us. But the true story behind that is the schools that formed T.C. Williams, apparently they could have started their third string and beaten anybody at state.
Wow.
The team was so loaded. So just, you know, I mean, it's just funny how those little small world things come into play.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I know, was it Hayden Panettiere was in the show, in the movie as well?
Yeah. I didn't think about that.
What was it like seeing her as a young and now just watching her grow through the years?
Well, I humbly admit that I've enjoyed watching said growth. Well, I'd like to kick Vladimir Klitschko's ass. No, I'd have to bring a bat to that one. Wow. But yeah, you know, it is odd. I mean, because she was just a little kid, you know, and you stand there. I'm on my second film set of my career. You know, I didn't think anything about it. Now, I mean, you know, she just exploded.
Next thing, she's the cheerleader that everybody's got to save, or else the world ends because of
exploded. In Nashville.
Nashville. That's
the cheerleader.
Yeah.
Save the cheerleader, save the world in Nashville.
Hey, you know what? Yeah, she. I'm telling you what, that girl, she's turned out to be gorgeous. I'd save her. I've got a few people I'll trade for. You know, just.
Not sure what the going rate is for Hayden Panettiere these days, but I'm sure we can make a negotiation.
I'll go kidnap people if I need to. You know, whatever it takes. You know, rent a U-Haul utility van and load them up.
Now, was that
you're a sports fan yourself too? So was that even more of an incentive to get in on this film, or did that have anything to do with your interest in it?
Well, I love doing sports films. Anything to do with sports, I'm in. But you know, the only thing I hated is that because I was one of the actors, because of insurance purposes, I couldn't do any of the hitting.
Oh, that's true.
That part sucked. I wanted to hit. I mean, I'm out there. You know, it's weird. You know, you haven't played football since high school, and now you're out there suited up, and you're on a football field, and it's kind of like, I'm getting that Friday night tangle, boys. You know, I'm about ready to get out here and line up and you know, crush a quarterback or two or something. I mean, I was ready to go. And I'm telling you right now, the stunt players on these films, I mean, these guys are journeymen. They, you know, I mean, a lot of the guys that were in Remember the Titans went on to do, you know, We Are Marshall, and, you know, they had done The Program, and, you know, these are ex-college, semi-pro players. You know, they're not joking around out there. I mean, they're knocking heads. They are knocking some heads on that field. Those hits, I mean, you can feel a few of them when you're standing on the sidelines just behind the camera watching, going, ooh, yeah, damn. And on second thought, I think I'll be at craft service. Call me when I need.
And it seems like it's the same coordinator for all the football plays that does every single film, because you see him appear as like the opposing coach or opposing assistant coach in every game.
Yeah.
Right, in every one of these.
Yeah. You know, you do see the same people. I mean, David Dwyer, who played my team's coach in the film, I mean, he's in Blindside. The Blindside, I want to say he's also in We Are Marshall. You know, so I mean, but and he,
I think, cast.
Yeah, I think he's based down around the Nashville area. I haven't talked to him in a while, but yeah, I mean, you see him pop up in all these Southern sports movies. It's hilarious. And I'm like, oh, there's David. It's like Southern sports movie. David will be in that.
Now, do you still keep in touch with anyone from Remember the Titans?
I keep in touch with David once in a while when I catch him on Facebook. But other than that, I still bump into a lot of the crew people, because I still do work in Atlanta, and a lot of them are still around there. And, you know, I remember running into a couple of them. I was doing a pilot with Nathan Lane called Local Talent that unfortunately didn't get picked up, which I wish it had. It would have been hilarious. He was playing a Broadway actor who blamed his lack of a career on the fact that he looked too much like Nathan Lane. I just thought that was such a brilliant idea. But yeah, so, you know, I still run into a few of them when I'm on sets. But, you know, as far as the cast, I mean, I was only there for, I was only on set for 3 days. So, you know, unfortunately, I mean, I'd have made better friends with Ryan Gosling if I'd have known he was going to blow up like that.
Yeah. You know? Was he as handsome then as he is now? Was he that dreamy?
You know what? I tell you, when I remember, he was like a skinny kid. I mean, he you know, now, I mean, good Lord.
Yeah, it seems like only in the last, like, few years, like, all of a sudden he just woke up and, like, I am a stud, and everybody noticed.
Whatever pill he's taking, I want it. I need it. I'm 40, man. Shit's starting to sag.
Now, just wait until you hit 45.
Oh, God, please, no. No, I'll be tacking stuff up with a staple gun or something, you know, just, we can't have that. I refuse to let gravity get a hold of me.
Tunnel tape works wonders.
Nice. I figure if worse comes to worse, Gorilla Glue is always an option.
No, it hurts too much when you try and peel them apart.
You know what? It might be worth the pain. It sure beats going to the gym.
That's why I'm getting ready to start the DDP yoga.
Oh, have at that, brother.
I heard that was
enough. Hey,
the program that I've been on here lately has been the Yingling yoga program. You know, you kind of have to position yourself a certain way and hold the beer as it comes to you. And I'm telling you right now, after about six sips, I'm done. I'm on the couch.
Stand on one leg and balance, or
yeah, exactly. You know, but I mean, you know, you can only do that for so long, and then, you know, see, the rest of the beer in the fridge relieves the soreness.
Ah.
You know, I'm telling you what, it's a great plan. It's the best diet I've ever been on.
I think that's a sponsorship deal brewing.
I agree. Yingling, come on.
Hillbilly Horror Show brought to you by Yingling.
I love it. That just has such a lovely ring to it, doesn't it?
It does.
Yingling, the official sponsor of the Hillbilly Horror Podcast.
Yeah,
we're marketing this whole thing now.
I'm telling you, it's a package deal. It's a package deal.
Because I think Yingling is actually, isn't it made not too far? It's like in Pittsburgh, maybe, or no?
They're, let's see, where? I know they're in Pennsylvania. Pottsville.
Pottsville, that's right.
Okay. Yep. I've read that can many times, folks.
It's within reach of where you're doing all your stuff, so it's, you know, it's not far outside of the box.
Absolutely. I think this is a brilliant idea. We need to do it.
Do it. Make it
now,
so.
Now,
with the horror stuff, how's that? Were you always a horror fan? I know that you're probably getting to be maybe more of a connoisseur, seeing a lot more of the indie stuff coming in. Do people turn to you and, like, think of you as a horror buff now, or were you before?
I think they're starting to think of me as a horror actor. That's for sure. I mean, I grew up on horror films. I mean, my friends and I, when we were teenagers, I mean, we would, you know, in the winter times, especially when we couldn't, you know, when it's too cold to get outside, I mean, we'd go and rent, like, you know, 10 horror movies and just sit up all night getting, you know, yoked out on Jolt Cola and, watching horror movies till 5 a.m. and then, you know, just crashing whoever's basement we have to be. So, you know, and I grew up in, I guess, what is considered, you know, kind of the golden age of horror, you know, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, you know, Return of the Living Dead. So I was a junkie for it. I really was. And then, you know, you kind of get away from all that, I guess, as you get older, you know, you kind of let go of all that. But there's not much out there I enjoy doing more than making horror films. They're fun. They're creative. You know, watching these special effects teams work. I mean, our special effects folks for the cabin, watching them do their job is just, it's amazing. I mean, I just sit there and go, I couldn't do that. There's no way. I mean, but just, you know, all this meticulous stuff that they have to do to create these effects. And then, you know, when you see them, you're just like, damn, that looks real.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we had a scene where, you know, one of the victims has a tree stump going through her mouth and coming out the top of her head, you know, with brain matter and the whole nine yards. And I mean, you're just standing around taking pictures with your phone going, damn, you look dead. Hey, you look really dead. But it's just so much fun to do. I mean, there's so much fun to do. And I mean, if I make a career off of doing horror movies, hell, that ain't so bad. I can do that.
Yeah.
And then hopefully it brings more opportunities.
Right. Yeah, because how do you kind of see horror now? Because you see it as kind of maybe resurging again, or do you think it's still kind of an undercurrent and really kind of maybe downplayed in a certain way? Like maybe it's not as respected with all the other movies that are out there nowadays.
I mean, I think it's always there. I mean, it has the biggest fan following of any film genre there is. I mean, it outdoes action, it outdoes comedy, it outdoes any. And because you've just got this core of really, you know, ravenous fans that want anything horror. They want anything they can get their hands on horror. Now, I think it does go in cycles to a degree. You know, I think you'll have these runs where, you know, almost everything coming out is, you know, gore and grindhouse style films. And I mean, I appreciate those. They're just not really my bag of chips because I like to be able to eat while I watch a movie.
me too.
You know, so, I mean, you know, sorry, but human centipede is just not on my menu.
So you're saying in high school you had pizza and wing parties and watched Faces of Death?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it was nothing when I was 13. Now I'm, you know, I'm old and I'm pitiful and sensitive and, you know, I just can't do that. It's kind of like, oh, God, just put the chips away, please. I can't even look at food. And then you go through these runs where, you know, everything kind of centers on the paranormal. You know, you had these runs where you had like The Ring and The Grudge, and you know, they'll be very similar. Now the one thing that I cannot stand is the remakes. I mean, you know, when you start remaking movies like Carrie, and not that I'm knocking the filmmakers, I mean, you know, or the actors even, I mean, you know, work's work. You take the work. But there are too many, and I know too many other filmmakers in the genre itself, there are too many great original scripts out there. That are just itching to be made and should be made. And, you know, meanwhile, we're, you know, remaking this movie or remaking that movie. And you can't remake something that was legendary. I mean, Nightmare on Elm Street is legendary. You're never going to do it as good as it was done. I don't care what special effects you have. I don't care what actors are in it. You're never going to do it as good as it was done. And the same goes for the rest of them as well. So I'd love to see the powers that be that you know, choose to go that direction because they know it's quick money. I'd rather see them, you know, pull some of these great horror scripts that are out there and turn those loose instead.
What's your favorite horror film, and then in turn, what's your least favorite or one that you would think is the worst that you've seen, oh, maybe in the last 10 years?
My favorite one will always be Return of the Living Dead. I don't know what it was about that movie. I think it was because they had a lot of naked chicks in it, and I was 13.
Works every time.
Yeah, they had me. They had me at the chick dancing naked on the grave.
Carrie Fisher in the Slave Leia dress did it too.
Yes. you know, I that one will always be my favorite. But as far as my least favorite, oh gosh, I mean, you see bad horror movies. I mean, it's not like you can't find them if you look. But Human Centipede I knew I shouldn't have watched it, and I appreciate the filmmakers for what they did because it's their film and that's what they wanted to make, and I'm a filmmaker, so I am wholeheartedly behind them in that respect. But God, that movie was gross. The finale of that, will some things cannot be unseen. It just, some things can't be unseen.
Now with the remakes, favorite remake, worst remake in your opinion?
To be honest with you, I don't even watch them. I refuse. I mean, when the remakes come out, I'm kicking back and throwing the original in the DVD. I mean, I just won't support it because, like I said, there's too many great filmmakers and great screenwriters out there with awesome scripts and awesome capabilities to make the films, you know, make fresh, new, new films with, you know, just stuff that we haven't seen yet, or just such a unique spin on things that we've seen in the past that, you know, I don't want to support the remakes. Now, I mean, would I be in one? Yeah, of course. I'm an actor. I'm going to take the work. But, you know, even then, I probably wouldn't go watch my own movie. I hate to say it that way, but it's just the truth.
Now,
I
would rather see more original work.
I didn't even think about, like, I started running through my head, like, all the remade horror movies that they've come up with in the last, like, 5-10 years, and it's actually a lengthy list. It's really actually kind of sad. And those are probably your more prominent horror movies that the majority of the people know.
Yep.
And some of them aren't even that old. Like, I think it really hit home for me when Evil Dead got a remake. Yeah. And it's like, that doesn't seem like it's that old of a movie to me. So why is it, I mean, it was low budget, but that was about it.
Yeah. But I mean, you got, like, you know, I mean, you got great horror films, or at least I thought it was great. I loved it. It was the Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was unique. It was a fresh twist. It was funny as hell, I thought. You know, so it's not pure horror, but, you know, it was something fresh. It was something new.
Now, I thought Bruce Campbell said Evil Dead, the newer one, really wasn't a remake. It was it still takes place in the original Evil Dead universe.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's now advanced to the future. Yeah, it's almost like a pickup.
Is that how they set it up, or is that how you interpret it? I haven't seen it myself.
I haven't seen it either, but I thought that's what Bruce Campbell was talking in a couple interviews.
If Bruce Campbell said it, you could take it to the bank, because that man is badass. I love Bruce Campbell. He's genius.
Yeah. I know, like, for me, I've been kind of interested in the new Mad Max remake, and only after I learned that the director of this one is the same one that did the original. So to me, it's like he's probably gonna have, like, the same feel, but he's gonna advance it in some way. Like, there's gonna be a connection and a payoff for having watched both of them.
Yeah, I mean, you would hope so. I mean, you would hope so. I mean, I haven't seen the original Mad Max movies in so many years. I'm gonna have to dig those up somewhere and run through them before I go see it. Unfortunately, I don't get to go see a lot of films, and you have to understand, my children are 7 and 9, and the world revolves around the Avengers. I mean, I don't care if I have one word in the next Avengers movie or Iron Man movie. I just want to be able to go and do it, know that it gets cut into the film, not say a word to my children, and just take them to the theater and let them sit there and watch till I show up on the screen. Just to watch their reaction one time. So,
Captain America Civil War is filming down in Atlanta right now.
I'm jumping in the car. I'm going down. I'll beat their door down till they give me a role.
That's what Daddy does.
Yeah. I'm thinking that's not going to work out in my favor too well, but I'm going to give it a shot.
Are they allowed to watch much of the work that you've done already?
No, I'll show them clips. I'll show them clips, and then, you know, I mean, I just recently did a Mountain Dew commercial with Dale Earnhardt Jr., and I found out that it was going to air during the Talladega race, and so we're sitting in here, we're just watching the Talladega race, and then finally, you know, here the commercial pops up on screen, and they're like, "Daddy, that's you!" I'm like, "Well, yeah, where did you think I was for 3 days?"
So, did you trade Dale for some more Mountain Dew to drive his race car, or is that
something
else?
I'm actually the new Dale Call guy.
Oh, okay. Nice.
So I'm rocking the Dale Call in this one. It was such a fun commercial to shoot. I mean, we're out there, you know, and before we shot, the day before we or 2 days before we started filming, the director took the whole cast out, and we did a bonding experience there and played paintball for like 5 hours.
Oh, nice.
Oh my God, we had so much fun.
Was now,
and you got to shoot paintballs at Dale or no?
No, unfortunately, Dale wasn't with. I mean, because when we shot that, they were about 2 weeks away from the Daytona 500. So when you know they had this very limited window of time to get Dale in and get him out because he had a million and one other things to do, and yeah. I'm sure shooting a commercial was the least of his concerns.
Now, talking about Dale calls or duck calls, while I was looking for videos of you on YouTube, I came across a gun show.
Yeah, yeah, Gallery of Guns TV.
How hard was it to do that show? Because it looked like you just came on, did your bit, then they cut to the other two people, and you came back near the end of the segment, did your thing, and it's like...
Well, the thing is we would cycle around. Sometimes Anne-Marie Rhodes, who's my who was my co-host on the show, I'm not with the show anymore, but we would split time. One of us would be up front doing the intro and the outro, uh-huh. and then the other one would be back behind the desk doing the whole spiel about whichever firearm we were talking about.
Everything I saw was you doing intro and outro.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's funny. I know there's plenty of clips out there of me actually doing my thing behind the desk, but the real fun for me in that was the shooting. I mean, I grew up around police work my whole life because of my dad. I mean, my dad was a magistrate for the sheriff's department for years, and all of his buddies were cops, and so you know I was going out and shooting on police pistol ranges when I was seven, and that was just something I'd always done up until I moved away to college, and then you kind of get away from it for a while. I think my parents knew not to let me have guns in college. I don't know why. but yeah, so I, when the opportunity for the show came along, I jumped on it, and I mean, it was just a wonderful experience. I mean, all the people with Gallery of Guns TV were just great folks, and I mean, on top of that, a lot of the guests that we had on the show are the best shooters in the world. I mean, Casey Eusebio is the captain of Team Glock. They send him over to train the Danish Army.
Wow.
I mean, this guy, he can shoot faster than any and more accurately than any human being I've ever seen, with the exception of maybe Jerry Miglin. And then, Mark Hanisch is a multiple three-gun world champion. I mean, when you're getting to learn from people like that, you shut up and listen, because they can teach you a lot.
So what was your favorite gun to fire on that show? Gives you a chance to do a Tim Allen moment here.
I think we got to shoot the F&H Ballista, which had originally been developed for the military as a long range sniper rifle. I mean, it was in 338 Lapua, which is anybody listening who, or watching that knows firearms knows what a beast of a cartridge that is. I mean, cartridge itself is, almost 4 inches long.
Wow.
And we actually got to shoot. They ended up, the military, something happened, the military didn't take it or something like that, but they developed it for civilian consumption, and we got to shoot that. That was a beast. It was a piece of machinery. But I just remember that we were shooting steel plates that were 500 yards away that were rated to take the caliber of a 50 BMG, and we were putting inch dents in.
Wow.
So, yeah. But, there were also some guns that weren't so fun, and I won't call the manufacturers out, but I had to shoot this kind of retro, kind of redo of a Buffalo rifle in 45-70, and I put 6 rounds through it, and it gave me a migraine. Talk about taking half a bottle of ibuprofen and laying down for a few hours. It actually gave me a concussion.
Wow. Oh,
my goodness.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the firearms I saw was from the Duck Commander crew. It was size Cottonmouth Killer.
Yeah.
I
remember that one.
The guy talking about it just seemed, I don't know, maybe it was just that particular clip, but he seemed really dry a little bit. It was like, okay, but the gun... The gun was interesting.
Yeah, the gun's interesting. I mean, you also got to remember, I mean, these guys are, you know, they're gun guys. They are not, you know, they're not trained for on camera. So, but, you know, we have them because they're the experts on their product. So, you know, I mean, a lot of times it was uncomfortable for some of the people that would come on the show because they're not used to being in front of camera. And of course, Anne Marie and I, you know, we've been doing this for so long. And of course, I was with the show for 4 seasons. You know, by the time we got into our 3rd, 4th season, I mean, we made it look easy.
Right.
And, you know, our guests would be really nervous because they're just not used to it. But we'd always coax them through it.
Now, what other projects do you have coming up?
Well, I mean, of course, all my attention right now is on Finding Waldo and getting it made. And, you know, want to encourage everybody watching, go to Indiegogo and give us your money. All you got to do, go to Indiegogo.com. It's got a little search thing up in the corner. You type in Finding Waldo. Hopefully I don't need to spell that for anybody out there. Finding Waldo, and you click the little, you know, search thingy, and it'll come right up, and then you click it, and then you just go down the list, down to the $10,000. And you click that, and it'll also say on there, do you want to add an extra amount?
You
want
yes.
So you want to add another 40 grand down in that section? And then just, you know, send it on, preferably through PayPal so that I can, like, you know, move it over into our account real fast the second it shows up. But no, hopefully people will go to the Indiegogo campaign and check it out. And I mean, we've got some really cool perks. I mean, you know, everything from just a thank you on Facebook all the way up to, you know, being able to attend the world premiere and walk the red carpet with cast crew and be seated right in there with us, just like you're part of the film. And of course, be credited, with the film. And everything else. And then beyond that, I'm actually starring in a post-apocalyptic thriller called The Endless Whispers. It's got a really different take on, I mean, you know, because I, you know, thanks to The Walking Dead, everything's post-apocalyptic these days. But this is a very different storyline, a very original script with some really nice twists to it. And, you know, we just got done filming some little featurettes for it. And we're kind of putting those out there as buzz. And they're actually going to be shooting a couple more, I think, this summer. So it'll be some good stuff. But we're hoping to get rolling on that, late this year, early next.
Okay.
And then everything else, you know, filmmakers, hire me. I'm actually pretty good at this stuff. Or at least I like to tell myself that. My mom thinks I'm good.
Moms don't lie.
Yeah, moms don't lie. My mother would never lie. My mother's a saint.
That's right.
My dad, on the other hand, he'll lie his ass off.
Hey, bonus says you know David Dwyer.
Huh?
I said bonus says you know David Dwyer.
I do. I know David Dwyer. I have had beer with David Dwyer. Thank you very much. David's a great guy. I miss David.
So,
well, I guess also, where can we find you on the internet? If somebody was looking for you, especially if they're looking to cast you for something, I guess.
Well, if it's a Friday or Saturday night, check the local jail. people can reach out to me on Facebook, facebook.com/Bo Keister, Twitter @Bo Keister. I'm on Instagram, but I can't even remember my username.
I'm going to guess Bo Keister, but you know,
I don't know. I mean, all the women can look for me on Tinder. Find me on Tinder, you know, but just be within at least a 1,000-mile radius, you know. Definitely. And you know, they can check out Hillbilly Horror Show at hillbillyhorrorshow.com and find that on Facebook. And then, of course, Finding Waldo, facebook.com/FindingWaldoFilm and Waldo at WaldoFilm2015 on Twitter. So check us out.
Well, we thank you for coming on and joining us this week.
Thank you all so much for having me. It's been a blast.
No problem. So until next time.
So, the bad crowd you've been hanging out with is a science fiction club?
This has been a Weeby Geeks production.